It's not lost to bright and cool. So I'm testing lots of because it's becoming. Becoming. Into this reality. And not only that, the decoding takes place in a tiny frequency range. We call this more light. For someone to point out and say, you can basically lie because of the narrow band of frequency that we actually experience. And what mainstream science says, they're going to find out there's a lot more than they think, but what mainstream science says is the vast overwhelming majority of mass matter energy in this universe is what they call dark energy, or dark matter. It's not dark in the sense that if you were there decoding it, it'd be pitch black. It's dark because it's not luminous, as they say. There's more light on that stuff. And so, we, the reason I'll get to in the second part of this day, we have been genetically manipulated, that in other ways, to cease to decode a much wider range of frequencies than we used to. Before the manipulation, before what I call the system. That's why 95% of DNA is called junk DNA, you don't know what it does. Oh yeah, God said, I put 95% in, you don't know what it does. I'm going to do it because, you know, it's not. You have to look it out. No! And so it puts in this narrow band, this is what we're going to do with it in the second half. And even what we call the electromagnetic spectrum, visible light, the only frequency range we can decode into an experience of reality, is a fraction of even the electromagnetic spectrum. And some things I've seen have said that actually, of the mass matter that mainstream science says exists in this universe, there's a lot more. Visible light is, or the electromagnetic spectrum is 0.005% of that. 0.005%. And visible light is even less than that. It's a narrow band that we call the world. And we look and we think, hey, everything I can see forever. No, you can decode that much. It looks like forever. So we are consciousness having an experience through this body computer, this biological computer. It's more than that. It's projection is more than that. The computer analogy works really well. Because if I want to go on the internet, I can't just go on the internet. I need a controller, I need an interface, and we call that a computer. And I don't go on the internet, the computer does. I observe through the computer the internet. And so consciousness, which is vibrating much quicker than this virtual reality, needs a conduit to experience this realm, this frequency range. And we call that the body, what I call the biological body computer. And what we call mind-body is the conduit. What we call consciousness is that which is experiencing and observing through mind-body into this reality. About a couple of years ago, I was sitting in the back, and there was this sudden kind of series of pictures in my mind, really vivid. Started out with billowy energy, which I immediately took to symbolize consciousness. The next stage was an eye appeared in the energy, and then after that, a telescope appeared in front of the eye. And at the end of the telescope was the Earth and the universe. And the last movement was the telescope morphed into a human body. And I thought that was incredibly profound. I don't know where it came from, but incredibly profound. Because that's what the situation is. This is the conduit, the lens through which we experience this reality. And because it's a lens, and a computer system in a very sophisticated way, well beyond what we call computers, it limits the rays that you can see. So you have an experience which appears to be individual and all the rest of it. But it's just consciousness having the experience. The key in the conspiracy, please note this, is to get us to identify who we are with the telescope, with the lens, instead of that which is experiencing and observing through the lens. And when that focus comes down to lens level, that's what we get into five-sense reality, that's what we get into little me, that's
we are. All possibility. I went there once, consciously. Extraordinary place. Absolute silence. Absolute stillness. Little bit of movement, I felt like slow motion here and there. And everything in all existence was there. Why? Because it was all possibility. That's who we are. All potential. All that is, ever can be, everywhere and nowhere. People say, you can't be everywhere and nowhere. You can, but you're in all possibility. Because everything exists in all possibility. So it's everything and nothing. Everywhere and nowhere. Everything and nothing. Oh, you can't do everything and nothing. It's all possibility. That's who we are. And people that know things, nothing. Nothing means non-existence. Within the nothing is everything. Within the silence is everything. You know, people kind of often get almost frightened of silence. They get in the car radio. They go in a room, tell it. We're still the silence, give me the 5 senses. And yet, the silence is where all exists. How can it be? What can you hear? Nothing. No, you can hear everything. It's all potential. So, silence is everything. When I start speaking, I'm pulling one potential out of the all potential, the nothing, the silence. And when I stop speaking, it goes back into the nothing, back into everything. That's who we are. And what we're choosing is different potentials out of that all potential, all possibility, but in the end, all possibility is what we are. We're having a one possibility now, called an experience in this world. The silence is where you find so much, the nothing. And then, through sound, thought, consciousness, create movement. And movement creates form. This is a thing called cymatics. I mean, if you go on YouTube, see this cymatics, if you've never seen it, it's amazing. What they do is they put all these particles on it like a tin plate, and they play a sound across it. Bloody hell, all these particles move into these fantastic geometrical shapes, and then as soon as the sound stops, all over the place again. They change the sound, the geometrical shape changes. Sound creates form. And out of all possibility come all these potentials, which we call dimensions, we call worlds. And they operate at different frequencies, different densities of energy, therefore they all share the same space, just like radio and television stations share the same space without interfering with each other, so do these densities, because they're different frequency ranges. So within this everything, nothing that I'm standing in now is all existence. Every world, every reality, everything is in this space. But even any space, you get into it. So, this is our world. This frequency range that we're decoding from the time we enter to the time we leave. And when we leave, of course, the death experiences that I've talked about, our reality becomes very different to all we've been experiencing within this body computer. What we have is infinite consciousness and then different points of focus, different points of attention, better word, different points of attention. So at the moment, our attention is through the lens into this world, but it's just a point of attention. So whatever happens in this control system and all the challenges we get, we will, it's just an experience. Time is a great way of holding us in this reality because there is no time and there is no space. These are constructs, these are information within the energy field which we decode. They're information within the fabric, the vibrational fabric of the virtual reality, and we're decoding it, like the wireless internet, into time, space, and all these things that we think are real, when actually they're all going on in here as a decoding system. So, when you come in from no time into this time, if you get so caught in time, then it's more and more difficult to connect with that level of ours which is operating in no time. And I think it's important that while we look at the watch and say, yeah, time's getting on, I better talk quicker and all the rest of it, that we also have an understanding that this is just a code, time is just a decoding system. We're actually in no time. Sounds strange. Now, for the early years, right, it's said to be you that there was no time, but I was disappearing on my backside trying to understand it. Like that. And then eventually the penny dropped, and when the penny dropped, it's so bloody obvious. There is only one point of time, that's now. People say, no, there's a past and there's a future. Well, where are you when you think of the past? Well, I'm in the now. And where are you when you think of the future? I'm in the now. There is only now. These are projections. And if we get pulled into the past, regret, revenge and animosity and all the rest of it, or pulled into the future, oh, what's going to happen? So, no, we shouldn't. Then we're getting pulled from the only point of focus where we can change anything, which is now. And all the time we get pulled into the past, if only, and pulled into the future, what's going to happen? And as they do that, our point of focus and attention is being pulled out of the only place that we can change anything, which is now. And time controls our lives. And it's meant to. It's part of the construct. It's part of the manipulation. Oh, what's the time? Oh, the time's running out. You got the time? Oh, what time is it? Oh, cool, is that the time? All this is pulling us and holding us into the construct. When there is no time, but there is the perception of time as we decode the information within the fabric of the virtual reality. And time for me is a bit like a DVD, like a movie. When you start watching a DVD movie, as you go through the movie, the scenes you watch become your past. The scenes you're yet to watch become your future, and the scene you're watching is your present. But they all exist at the same time, same moment, on the same disc. It's just a point, where on that disc are you, that gives you a fix on past, present, and future. It's an illusion. And I wrote a book years ago called Tales from the Time Loop, when for various reasons, I started to understand that we live in a time loop. That's what one part of this reality is. And I read recently that science is actually understanding this now. They call them causal loops, where time turns back on itself and creates a loop. And so if you keep walking or moving through this loop, you eventually come back to the start. It's a closed system, closed circuit. That's what they call it in the deeper levels of this that I'll get into in the second period. Who are we? Well, we're supposed to be humans, but that's not what we are. That's our experience. Humans is a software program. We're consciousness. Multi-leveled consciousness. That's our true state. And I saw this very clearly when my mother died a few years ago. I've gone through my life, so my mother died. I've never seen a dead body in my life. My life didn't take me to that. And on the day of the funeral, my brother said to me, "You want to go see your mother in the funeral bar, it's open coffin." And I said, my first reaction is, no, I just remember who she was. She's there now. But there's something that said, go. So I went. I walked in this room, and there's the mother in this coffin. And, well, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's my reaction. I've never seen anything dead in life. There's nothing like there. But here, on a chair, waiting to be taken to the funeral, was this picture of my mother. That picture was alive. Because when we take a photograph, it doesn't just take the physical form, it takes multi-level energy levels that are in that scene that it's picturing. And I'm looking at my mother, totally lifeless, in a body, and I'm looking at my mother alive in a picture. And what that picture had, that sparkle, that light, that force, was what the body didn't have. And I could see so clearly in that profound moment what we are and what had left the body. And so when people have near-death experiences, the real them is telescope down. You're bright, you're leading this limitation experience to all expansive, all gold. And people talk about going through the times and all that stuff, but I found this quote, I read it extensively, the near-death experiences and what people had said, incredible common themes. This was a wonderful quote from someone when they left the body before they came back. Everything from the beginning, my birth, my ancestors, my children, my wife, everything comes together simultaneously. I saw everything about me and about everyone who was around me. I saw everything they were thinking now, what they thought then, what was happening before, what was happening now. There is no time, there is no time. There is no sequence of events, no such thing as a limitation of distance, of period, of time, of place. I could be anywhere I wanted to be simultaneously. That's who we are, and that's who these guys are desperate to stop us understanding we are, because when we realize this, that's all over. And that's where we are. That's where we are. Well, the whole system is structured to stop us understanding this. I mean, you know, I go around the world all the time, and I'm television on and stuff like that, here and there. There's 24/7 channels, there's hundreds of them. When do you turn one on that says, we're going to have a look at the paranormal, we're going to have a look at the reasons for these things. Can anyone explain them? Who are we? Where are we? What is reality? No, you're in that. Here and there, maybe once in a blue moon. Never. Do they talk about that at school? Who are we? Where are we? What are we doing here? Door, your name, Jimmy Brown, and you're going to go into the system, the college, and you're going to do a job. It's reality. What we do when we die, we put the telescope down. We're consciousness, and our focus on the body, as Einstein said, this delusion is kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature in its beauty. Because the more we come here, the more we think of apartness. Then you get competition, dog eat dog. The more you think we're all one consciousness having an experience, the more you think unity, support, coming together. This focus on the five senses is crucial to dividing all. But this, like I say, major massive difference between mind and consciousness. Mind is the conduit, the body-mind is the conduit to experience this reality. We get caught in body-mind, and most people are there, then that's when we get caught in the virtual reality. I think it's real, I think it's us. And consciousness, the now, experiences this reality. If we don't hold a connection, an awareness, as we experience this, to the level of who we really are, then this happens. We get lost completely and bewildered in the game, because we have no point of reference except that. And coming this way is the control system's version of reality. I see consciousness as like a flowing ocean. And everything is consciousness. Everything is from consciousness, including mind. But it's a different expression of it. It's much denser, symbolized by this ice. It's much denser and has a much lower level of awareness. Just like a computer has a lower level of awareness than the person working it. And then George Bush is online at the time. So what it is, this is the ocean of who we are, and then realities, illusory form, come out of this ocean. And we come out of this ocean, and we have an experience, and then we go back into the ocean. Not only come one gigantic blob, we still have our unique point of observation within it. And the prison that the system wants to put us in is the intellect. Because the intellect is mind, time stuff. This is why the hardest people to talk to about this stuff are academics. They can't get it because they're so caught in a left brain decoding system that they can't literally get their minds around or open their minds. He doesn't believe in miracles. There can't be any miracles. Actually, there aren't any miracles. It's just understanding reality and how it works. But they can't get their minds around that. You know, and when I come to an event like this today, with people from all walks of life and backgrounds and education and no education, like me, I mean, I'm a school of 15. Look at that, I was out. Pastor, thank you, God. I just, like, as you see as the day unfolds, I just give everything I can. There it is. When I see things like the Oxford Union, which is this like famous debating society at Oxford University, where people are really clever, don't you know? I actually literally have to put it in baby steps. And I have to leave some things out because I know it'll blow their bloody minds. I know this is a rule, it's ridiculous. I did a talk there a couple of years ago, now time goes by, what a cool time doing. And when I talked about conspiracy and how the dots connect and all this stuff, that was fine. When I started talking about a bit about reality, I can't go too deep into it because they're high level students. but what I did, someone said, I was with you on that, you know, with the stuff of 9/11, but I couldn't understand all this stuff about reality, and I'm thinking, I didn't know exactly why this won't compute it. That's the idea. And then you think that then you realize this. You go through the education system, left brain, intellect, and if you're really good at it, then you go to college and university, intellect, and then you go into your world of work, your specialization. You become a doctor, you become a scientist, you become a government minister, and all the rest of it. And so the whole of the system, by you get there by and being good at exams, in, out, the whole of the system, all the institutions are people by left brain prisoners who can't get their head around the nature of reality itself. And that's why we live in a left brain society. So if we open the mind, it's not the mind's a bad thing, it's a conduit. When it becomes the governor of reality, you get in trouble. Open the mind. Then you can be in this world in terms of experience, but you're not of this world in your point of observation and perceiving reality. And this is the question, are we going to be consciousness or are we going to be little me, mind? This guy, I went to where this guy, Ramana Maharshi, meditated for, like, goodness knows how many years. He went there as a young kid, teenager, and he was very old when he died. He was sat on this mountain, Arunachala, in India, and he just meditated. I don't think better ways of spending my life. You know, fine. Everyone to their own. But what he did get as a result of that was an understanding of the difference between mind and consciousness. And he said, mind is consciousness which is put on limitations. You are originally unlimited and perfect. Later you take on limitations and become the mind, become the conduit, and therefore see everything in terms of limitation. Einstein, a human being is part of the whole called by Earth's universe, a part limited in time and space. He experiences himself, his thoughts and feeling, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical illusion of his consciousness. And that's what it is, an optical illusion. So it's not just free your mind. It's even bigger than that. It's free yourself from mind by opening it to the levels of self. That can give us a much bigger fix on not only ourselves, but the world we live in. Instead of being the lens, we become aware of that which is experiencing and observing through the lens. What you get at that level is what I would say, like a phrase I came across years ago, infinite love is the only truth, everything else is illusion. Infinite existence, all possibility, is the only truth, everything else is illusion. The imagination of that all possibility may manifest. And being aware of the symbolism of the heart, the heart is a symbol that goes way, 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 way back. And it's not just this thing that goes like that. It's the spiritual heart, the heart vortex, which connects this level of us to other levels of other energy fields that interpenetrate through what we call the chakra systems, vortexes, wheels of light, I think, in Sanskrit. And what is becoming very interesting in terms of heart research now, is that the heart has its own electromagnetic field. And not only that, it's more powerful than the brain's electromagnetic field. And so the heart vortex, the heart field, is what connects us through powerfully to higher levels of ourselves. And the system wants to shut that down. Not only shut that down quicker than fear, stress, frustration, all the low vibration emotions that the system is there to impose upon us, shuts this down. And we get into our heads. When we open this, the head takes its place in the process. It doesn't become the governor of it. The difference between the head and the heart is thinking and knowing, intuition. We feel things intuitively. We know them. Don't think it, know it. Thinking is a very, very low level of perception. It's the mind. It's the brain. Very low level of perception. Intuition is the key. And what changed my life more than anything else was the day, about 20 years plus ago, a few months on, just before all this stuff happened for me, when I had a choice. My intuition said this, my head said that, I went with my head, and I lost it. I lost it as a result of it. And as a result, of course, it was all planned, it was just before all this happened. And I said to myself at that point, if ever my intuition and my head are at odds again, I'm going with my intuition. I've never not done that once, ever since. And what happens is you get into problems with it, because intuition doesn't seem like the way this sees it, so you do things that this goes, what the fucking hell? But then you see how following your intuition starts to make your life so incredibly synchronistic and an adventure instead of an ordeal. Because when we're accessing through the heart, we're accessing more and more of all possibility, and therefore we have a much greater level of awareness. What I call mind love, and there's nothing wrong with that, and the two can go together, but mind love is attraction. It's like I said in one of my books somewhere, love is not something you're in, it's something you are. And you have an attraction. I've talked to people who've had experience in mind control and all the rest of it, and they said, you know, if you stimulate certain chemicals in the brain between two people, they'll fall in love with each other. Because it's a form of attraction. And Einstein said again, the solution is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and affection for the person nearest to us. And that's mind love. And again, nothing wrong with that, you can have the two together. But this greater love, this connection to all it is, infinite love, is what we're really looking for. And again, close this. This closes. And that's what the system, society, is structured to do. And the more I've looked at this, the more the way society is structured makes perfect sense because of the outcome in these deeper levels of understanding that comes from it. When we open that, we go into this level of infinite love. Einstein talks about opening to a wider range of connection rather than a few people around us. Our task is to free ourselves from this prison by widening ourselves with compassion, etc., etc. And when we get into that mode, where we are in the world but not of it in terms of our perception, then you look through the same eyes, well, you don't really, you decode through the same brain, but what you see, perceive, totally transforms. And what happens then? People think you're crazy. And so then, caught in mind, you are really crazy. Because they can't compute it, they can't get it. And so that's why people stand out like that. They're crazy, they're dangerous. Not through history, people who've been in that situation. They always get the same treatment because the rest of the people can't get it. They can't see it. So you've got to be crazy. And so the body-mind is what we call the body. It's also the auric field. It's working as one unit. And it connects through to the body through what we call the endocrine system. A very important part of it is the pineal gland and the pituitary gland is what people call the third eye, the sixth sense that lets us see beyond this realm and see beyond this realm. And what's interesting is all these, or so many of these chemicals put in food and drink actually target the pituitary, in particular the pineal gland. So this is mind body. And it's interesting because if you put an electrical current through a wire, it throws out an electromagnetic field. And of course, through the central nervous system, we've got energy going through there, and it throws out an electromagnetic field called the auric field, it's body-mind. Now, if that, before I say that, of course, the Earth is the same, for reasons I've come to in this first section, the reason why everything operates basically the same. But this auric field, this body-mind, if it's connected out to the wider self, the wider levels, then you've got everything. You've got the conduit, and you've got the higher understanding of perception. Once the auric field closes up, and disconnects from that in terms of awareness, then we're in trouble. And like I said, the fluoride particularly calcifies the pineal gland. It's one of the reasons they want fluoride in water all over the bloody place. This is really kind of it's fascinating. This is kind of where my life's going in this, because I find this fascinating. But you start to see that because of that knowledge base they have that they've kept from us, you start to see why they do what they do. Because and it's all based and focused on keeping us in five sense perception and out of multi-level perception. So we just go round and round in the time loop, round and round and round and round, thinking we're going somewhere. Deja vu, I've been here before. But that gets us out, and suddenly you can see it. But anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. This is not about gurus on a mountain, cross legs and all that stuff. Not about that. We are all consciousness having experience in a body. Therefore, we all can do everything that's possible if we choose to do it. There are no up there people. Just that perception of it. And again, keep coming back to this fork in the road, and we get deeper into it. It's about, are we going to go with our knowing, with our intuition, with our consciousness, and let that be our guide, or are we going to let our head be our guide? Because this will do what it believes to be right. This will do what it believes is right for them in the moment, and often turns out not right for them at all. This can see the river from source to sea. This can see the next turn in the river. That's the difference. And if we trust this, then we'll be sitting on the bank, having a rest, just intuitively, I feel to have a rest. And someone will come up and say, bloody hell, mate, you were looking around that bend of bloody massive waterfall. And this would have gone, you know, bloody rest, I want to get sunset by nightfall. Key. Out. And so, there's people that connect and hold the connection, and they're in this world and all it, but this is where most people in the world are. Increasingly, more and more people are opening up and going through this process. Fantastic. But this is where most people are, and this is how the control system wants us to be. So the body's biological computer, as I call it, and by biological I mean it's not just reacting to input, it's actually making decisions, it has a form of consciousness, because it's conscious, it's my body. So, it's a biological computer, they started to build them, they started to work on building them, some universities, and Florida is one of them, where they have the ability not just to react to input, but to assess information and make a decision. And the body does that all the time, the immune system is doing it as we speak. So, like I say, the computer takes us on the internet, and this mind-body computer takes us into this virtual reality. And if we identify, you know, if someone on the moon identified with their spacesuit, we'd think they were crazy. Hey, Bill, you said we've got a problem, Bill, this is his spacesuit. What? They'd have a problem, wouldn't they? What do you do? Everybody thinks it's a spacesuit. That was a silly, but that's what we're encouraged to do, to believe we're our spacesuit, our vehicle. And this is what makes racism so bloody insane. Oh, I had a space suit, but it was made in this country, and it's this colour, so I'm better than you. What? You did it! You did it! Some bloody telescope! You did it! So you use a software program, and it plays out, it's an experience. But it's not who we are. back that up. This is an article in San Francisco Chronicle about DNA. DNA is a universal software code. From bacteria to humans, the basic instructions for life are written within the same language. Now, this language is a series of codes known as ATGNT. My code's actually a GNT, 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 GNT. And naturally, the difference between a virus and a human form is the way these codes are in relation to each other. And only small little changes in the coding can create dramatic changes in the physical form. Interestingly, when you look at the Matrix movies and all those codes going through the computers, and they were looking at those codes, and they weren't seeing codes in the story, they were seeing people in streets and landscapes. Because again, the decoding system is that movie series is based on a lot of truth. On one level, it's digital, as I'll get to later. So now we're having a situation where they're having what they call computer-body interfaces, computer-brain interfaces. The reason they can do that is they're actually connecting two computers. One, faster, fantastically more sophisticated than the other, but still a computer. And that's why through microchips and stuff, they can make them connect. And, you know, they've got, there's this guy in England called Professor Warwick. You know, his mother must have loved him, I don't know. But he goes around trying to sell to people being microchips, and he's got microchips in it. And all he says, I can turn the television on, put me on, you know, I can do all the random doors, you know. Or whatever turns you on, like, you know. But this is happening, and when you look at the body from being a sophisticated biological computer, it ticks all the boxes. Your computer gets a virus or something like that, it starts to slow up, and it gets worse, and it gets worse, and eventually you can't switch it off. That's me a couple of times. It won't switch on. And what do we say? My computer's dead. Well, that's what happens when the energy field, the consciousness, whatever you want to call it, puts the telescope down. It leaves, as my mother was in that coffin, totally lifeless, dead, just like the computer. Its energy, its power source has gone. We talk about computers going into sleep mode, where they just tick over on minimum input. That's what happens when we sleep, and our other higher levels go off and experience other realms. And then we have not antivirus and things like that, which are what? They're scanning all the time for threats to the computer. And that's what, in a far more sophisticated way, of course, that's what the human immune system's doing. And just with an antivirus system, if a new virus comes, which is not yet understood and dealt with, then it can overwhelm the computer. Same way, you know, I think it was the Europeans brought smallpox to North America, and lots of Native Americans died because they weren't used to it. Their antivirus has not been updated by experience of that. The calories are fantastic. But then, this is a photograph taken at the Nefer Hospital in Paris, where they injected a dye into the acupuncture points. And then they took a photograph, and they saw how this dye had gone around this system. And I looked at this, and I thought, it's a bloody motherboard. And what's interesting is what they call the energy, the qi as the Chinese call it, that energy is going around the body, down these channels. And what they found is, when that energy is not moving at optimum speed, it's too slow or too fast, the body reacts by becoming diseased, unhealthy. Why? Because that energy, like everything, is information. And when we get a virus in the computer, what do we say first of all? My computer's slow. Why? Because the information is not circulating and being communicated as it should. And what acupuncture is about is simply, not just from needles, not the needles, but it's a major part of it, is to make sure this qi energy is circulating at optimum speed. That's what it's doing. Therefore, the communication system out and back is optimum, and therefore we have health. In a computer, we have what they call a central processing unit, which processes the information traffic, some of the microchip, and that's what the brain is.
What does the computer people call the CPU, the brain of the computer?
Exactly, because that's what it is. And the brain is constantly filtering and assessing information and passing it out and bringing it back. And if that communication is not accurate, then all hell breaks loose. And this is why people that live under power lines and in electromagnetic fields of various kinds or work with them, they can get illnesses and cancers that other people don't get in anything like the same number. Why? Because the electromagnetic fields coming from the power lines, etc., are destabilizing the movement of this communicated energy around the body, and thus the body is misdecoding it all over the place into what we call illness. The hard drive, the DNA, holds the information. The hard drive information. And it's not just DNA that we can see, but that's just the decoding level of it. It's an energy field. Everything has an energy counterpart, body-mind. What we call cultures and all the rest of it, they're software programs. And they play out in various ways. And if we get caught in the software program, we can become so obsessed with our bloody culture, it becomes a dot. And we get caught. Instead of saying, I'm in the consciousness, having an experience of this, we become it. And then there's the division. This dot, my country is better than your country, and my race is better than your race, and so it goes on. This is an American guy from William Sheridan. Interesting story. He was having a heart transplant in New York Hospital. And before the operation, he was in the art therapy course. And he was about as good a drawer as I am. Three of them will do better than I do, I'll tell you. And he was drawing things like that. And then he had the heart transplant. And in his recovery in the hospital, he went back to the art therapy course. He suddenly started drawing much more sophisticated pictures. He didn't know why. The art therapist lady didn't know why. It was very strange. You don't usually meet the family of the governor, but because he was doing work to try to get people in his own organs, he met the mother of the person whose heart he took on. And he asked the obvious question, did your son like art? Did he like art? She said that he was asking for art materials instead of toys for 18 months. And there's a doctor, which is, I quote one of my books at some length, who has done a massive study over many, many years of how transplanted organs change people, the recipient, in terms not only of personality, but of attitudes. Because what they're doing is downloading information, which then becomes available to the recipient's body computer system, and they get access to that information, that knowledge, that personality, that attitude. This is my boyfriend, Craig Woodwork from South Africa, and he was telling me when I was talking to him about this a few years ago. He said in Africa, when they used to eat people, he said they used to have this golden rule that the person must be heated to a certain temperature, must be boiled, because if you don't, if you eat them, you become them, which is kind of the same basic situation that we're talking about. Now, in terms of self-identity, one of the greatest ways that we identify who we are with this is a man and a woman. I am male, I am female. No, that's what we're experiencing. We're all consciousness, all possibility. This is an experience, not a lot of being male or female, it's an experience. Yeah, good luck here. Well, you've got to be. But in end we are. And it's kind of funny that if that's who we are, how come chemical changes can change from one to the other? We had a chicken in Britain a few years ago. We got the name in the media as Freaky the Chicken. And the reason they called him Freaky was he started out right as a hen. And his legs, or she was legs. And then for some reason, it happens occasionally, apparently, there was this big testosterone explosion within this hen that became a cockerel. The comb started crowing at dawn and chasing the hens. And what's happened is there's been a chemical change. In other words, there's been a shift in the program of the computer.
the body computer, and so you go from man to woman. It's a program. It's not who we are. It's an experience. I got this off the BBC website. Scientists have been able to take control of fried brains to make females behave just like males. Researchers genetically modified the insects so that a group of brain cells that control sexual behavior could be switched on by a pulse of light. The team was able to get female fruit flies to produce a courtship song behavior usually only seen in males. Why? Because they're manipulating the computer. When I'm working at one night at work, I get up early in the morning before the sun, and I hear the birds start. Since the sun comes up, the birds start singing. I mean, is there someone with a bloody baton going, hold on, wait for it, jump! It's a program. Why did Freaky the Chicken, when he became a cockerel, suddenly start crying at dawn? Why didn't he crow at lunchtime? Because the program was playing out. Oh, we can override the program. Then we say, oh, well, tell me who you are. Well, I'm like my personality and my emotions and all that stuff. Not necessarily. You can change emotions by chemicals. You can change emotions by metals. So how can that be who we are if we change like that? But there was a lady in Britain a few years ago. 40 years before, she had gone out of nowhere with a clinical depression. For 40 years, she's in and out of institutions, had no token would work. 40 years on, one lady said to her, do you think anything happened about the time of the sky? She said, well, you ended up a big old star in 1930s with mercury. So she was advised to get rid of the toothbrush just to see if it worked and have a herbal detox. And when she did so, 40 years of clinical depression disappeared. And for 40 years, that lady thought, that's who I am. No, that's who her body computer appeared to be because mercury had destabilized its ability to code information. So all these things, good habits, bad habits, we pull these things on us and stuff like that. You know, what consciousness can do, however, and be open to it, it can override these programs. So that we start living life instead of life living us, which is what happens when we follow the program. All about self-identity. All about that. And there's a wonderful example of this, a real crucial example of this, with the two hemispheres of the brain. The left brain decodes language, and actually it decodes sequence. There is no sequence until this decodes it, that might not be a death experience, he said. And it decodes a sense of apartness, sense of structure, form, time and space. And the right brain is the out there. It's the creative part of us, the one that sees things in another way, from another angle. What the system wants is to keep us here. That's why society is structured as it is. So, connecting the two hemispheres of the brain, this is a picture by my great friend Neil Hay, wonderful artist, and this is the corpus callosum, as they call it. Now, whole brain people, this corpus callosum is constantly passing information between the two. And so you've got the best of both worlds. Nothing wrong with this. Nothing at all. It's when it's the governor that we're in trouble. And this is interesting that I came across. The difference between the two. What you need to do is say the colour, not the word. Say the colour, not the word. Because the right brain wants to say the colour, the left brain wants to say the word. It's interesting when you first do it. You think you've said the colour, then you realise you've said the word. These are the ways that the two sides work, and this is the governor in most people, vast overwhelming majority of people. And this is an interesting story. And if you put Jill Bolte Taylor into the internet, you'll find her saying this in a lovely video of about 20 minutes. This is so profound, what I came across with this lady. Jill Bolte Taylor is a neuroanatomist, a brain scientist, couldn't happen to a more perfect person in terms of experience. She had a stroke on December 10th, 1996. But She kept conscious through most of it. And the story she tells is incredible. First of all, she points out to the brain scientist that the two hemispheres process information differently. Each hemisphere thinks about different things. And this is what she said. They care about different things and have very different personalities. And this is what she said. I got up and I jumped on my exercise machine. She got up, she wasn't feeling very well, but she thought, well, I'll get to work. So I got up and I jumped on my exercise machine, and I'm jumping away on this thing, and I'm realizing that my hands look like primitive claws grasping the bar. And I thought, well, that's very peculiar. I looked down at my body and I thought, whoa, I'm a weird looking thing. And it was as though my consciousness had shifted away from my normal perception of reality, where I'm the person on the machine having the experience, to some esoteric space where I'm witnessing myself having the experience. I looked down at my arm and I realized that I had to no longer define the boundaries of my body. I can't define where I begin and where I end, because the atoms and molecules of my arm blend into the atoms and molecules of the wall. And what I didn't dare detect was this energy. And I'm asking myself, what's wrong with it? What's going on? And in that moment, my brain chatter, my left hemisphere brain chatter, went totally silent. Just like someone took a remote control and pushed a mute button, total silence. Why? She's having a stroke in the left brain. The left brain stopped decoding sound. When I say words, as they pass before they encode you, they don't pass through in words, they pass through in a vibration. And then we encode them into words. When that doesn't happen, we don't hear words, or we hear abstraction. And at first I was shocked to find myself inside of a silent mind. All this, when you can't go to bed, the conference says, you lie in bed and you're listening to it. How can it be you if you're listening to it? It can't be. It's the bloody computer whacking away. Consciousness is silent because it doesn't have to work things out. It knows. It just has to work things out. Like this one, that actually goes in. And at first I'm shocked to find myself inside a silent mind. But then I was immediately captivated by the magnificence of energy around me. But because I could no longer identify the boundaries of my body, I felt enormous and expansive. I felt at one with all the energy that was, it was beautiful there. But then all of a sudden my left hemisphere comes back online and it says to me, hey, we've got a problem, we've got to get some help. So I'm like, okay, I've got a problem. And I immediately drifted back into La La Land, as I call it, back into consciousness. But it was beautiful there. Imagine what it would be like to be totally disconnected from your brain chatter that connects you to the external world. Exactly. So here I am in this space, and any stress related to me, to my job, is gone, and I feel lighter in my body. And imagine all the relationships in the external world and the many stresses related to any of those that were gone, and I felt a sense of peacefulness. And imagine what it would be like to lose 37 years of emotional baggage. I felt euphoria. Euphoria was beautiful. And then my left hemisphere comes online and says, hey, you've got to pay attention. We've got to get help. And I'm thinking, I've got to get help. I've got to focus. So I've got to call help. I've got to call work. I couldn't remember the number of work. So I remembered in my office, I had a business card with my number on it. So I go into my business room. I pull out a 3-inch stack of business cards. And I'm looking at the card on top. And even though I could see clearly in my mind's eye what my business card looked like, I couldn't tell if it was my business card or not, because all I could see was pixels. Because on one level, as I've come to, this reality is digital. It's mathematics. And it goes through a decoding system until it becomes this. When it stops decoding it, we see our levels. And the pixels of the words blend in with the pixels of the background, and the pixels of the symbols, and I just couldn't tell. And I would wait for what I call a wave of clarity. And in that moment, I would be able to reattach normal reality, and I could tell, that's not the card. It took me 45 minutes to get 1 inch inside that stack of cards. In the meantime, 45 minutes, and everybody's getting quicker in my left hemisphere. And I do not understand numbers, I do not understand the telephone, it's the only plan I have. So I take the phone pad, and I put it right here, and I take the business card, and I put it right here, and I'm matching the shape of the squiggles on the card to the shape of the squiggles on the phone pad. Eventually the whole number gets dialed and I'm listening to the phone and my colleague picks up the phone and he says to me, whoa, whoa, whoa,
from frequency electrical signals. When I woke late that afternoon, I was shocked to discover I was still alive. When I felt my spirit surrender, I said goodbye to my life, and my mind is now suspended between two very opposite planes of reality. Because I could not identify the position of my body in space, or just this, I felt enormous and expansive, like a genie just liberated from a bottle. And my spirit soared free like a great whale gliding through the sea of silent euphoria. Nirvana, I found Nirvana. I remember thinking there's no way I would ever be able to squeeze the enormousness of myself back inside this tiny little body. But I realized that I'm still alive. I'm still alive and I found Nirvana. And if I found Nirvana and I'm still alive, then everyone who is alive can find Nirvana. And I picture a world filled with beautiful, peaceful, compassionate, loving people who knew they could come to this space at any time. And that they could purposely choose to step into the right of their left hemisphere and find this peace. And then I realized what a tremendous gift that experience would be. What an insight. This took me in how to live our life, and it motivated me to recovery. So who are we? We are the life force power of the universe with manual dexterity and two cognitive minds. And we have the power to choose moment by moment who and how we want to be in this world. Right here, right now, I can step into the consciousness of my right hemisphere, and where we are, I am the life force power of the universe. And the life force power of the 50 trillion beautiful molecular geniuses that make up my core. I'm one with all this, where I can choose to step into the consciousness of my left hemisphere, where I become a single individual, a solid separate from the flow, separate from you. I am Jill Walton Taylor, intellectual neuroanatomist. These are the we inside of me. Which would you choose? Which do you choose? And when? I believe that the more time we spend choosing to run the deep inner peace circuitry of our right hemispheres, the more peaceful we project in the world and the more peaceful our planet will be. And I thought that was an idea worth spreading. Fantastic. And that is why this is where we should be in our balanced state. And this is what the system does. Coldly, calculatedly, because it knows how it works, this is what the system does. Symbolically, it puts the troops on the door, the entrance to the left brain. You cannot progress within our left brain society unless you operate here. You go here, then you are strange, out there, not going to be there. And the pressure, look at it. What did Obama say? What did Obama say this week? Now, what's the man on? Well, I know he's on, as long as we're speaking his ear. American children have to go to school for longer and have less holiday breaks. What are they talking about? Why are they doing that? One reason is part of more and more from their parents. That's another story. But another reason is get them in there as early as possible and hold them there for life. An intellectual is someone whose mind watches itself. When a mind watches itself without consciousness, it's like Dumb and Dumber in that movie. They're both equally stupid, and so they both believe they're intelligent. Because they have no point of reference. That's what happens. But we live in a world in which minds are observing minds all the bloody time. It's stunning. And that's why minds, observing minds, someone who is beaten to a different drum, immediately, dangerous, crazy, nutter. And so we go round and round and round and round, getting nowhere. Just like that. The world is so crazy, it thinks it's sane, and that's because of mind. And this is the prison that holds humanity in servitude. Here. Mind. Break out of it and move. So, René Descartes, French mathematician and philosopher, once defined sense of self as I think, therefore I am. Well, I would update that on the body-mind level as I compute, therefore I am. And if it doesn't compute, you can't understand it. You can't get your head around it. So, I can't tell the time. I've got my own mind, but so much to say. doesn't get across. But this is why humanity is so programmable. Because computers are programmable. When you're conscious, you go beyond the program, you can see it. But if you're in the body mind, you can be programmed and think you'll think your own thoughts. And it's mass hypnosis. This guy, Paul McCann, is very famous. He's done some more work on Americans, but he's very famous for getting people at the start of a TV show have phobias, and at the end bringing them back when the phobia is the less or gone or whatever. And what he's doing is deleting programs. Why are some people instinctively frightened of spiders and some people are not? Some people instinctively frightened of this and not that. Well, they have no experience to make them frightened of anything. Because it's in the program, it just deletes the program. And there's this wonderful example of how programmable people are. This is a very well-known television program. What do we call them? Television programs. Absolutely. Television programs. It's called Top Gear. It's a motion program. And Paul McKenna worked with this guy, and they went out on this track of films, and because when you're programmed, you don't remember you've been programmed. Double point. And just before he got in the car, he was going to drive it. Richard Hammond said this. This Paul McKenna did said something, or made a sound or something, said something. And this guy was going, and he said to him, when you get in the car, you're not going to know how to drive it. Remember the first thing about driving a car? He doesn't know that's happened. This is happening on a mass scale all the time when he realised it. So he gets in the car, he doesn't know where to put the key. Completely clueless. Just because the computer has been programmed not to compute that knowledge, not to release that knowledge. Then they come back in the studio and they're all there, lies in there, the background, and they're all having a laugh, oh, that was funny. But he doesn't realise he's still programmed. So he's sitting there live, and then McKenna doesn't say anything. And then he said to him, this car is a toy car in the studio. He said, that's your real 911 Porsche Turbo. So, okay. And this guy starts acting as if it is, and he goes over and gets in. This guy, Jeremy Clarkson, he comes along with another one, smacks it in the side. He reacts as if he's just snapped into his real car. If you can access the encoding system, you can make people do whatever you bloody want. And this is just a television program. It's minor stuff compared to what's possible. So humanity is in a hypnotic trance. When we're watching television, we start producing the same brain waves that we do when we're in a hypnotic state. As Voltaire said, so long as the people do not care to exercise their freedom, those who wish to tyrannize will do so. For tyrants are active and ardent, and will devote themselves in the name of any number of gods, religious or otherwise, to put shackles upon sleeping men. And that's what we are, we're asleep. Well, people here are not asleep, but vast numbers of people are asleep, and we've all been asleep before, and we're still not fully awake, otherwise it's the process of deprogramming. So all the time we're getting these program messages, teachers and journalists and stuff. This guy, all glitzer in his life around the world, he is a hypnotist. He doesn't realise he is, but what is he doing? He's constantly repeating information, like teachers are, like parents are. They become programmed, they program the children, not out of animosity, but they think it's the best thing to pass it on. And so all the time, people are being programmed with a certain version of self and reality, cradle and brain. And it is incredible, against that background, that people are now in large, large numbers waking up and breaking the program. Shows the power of consciousness, though you will override it. All this is programming our sense of perception, just like a stage hypnotist. All these are Pied Pipers, all of them. And so we drop in to the program like a record stuck in the room, and just go on and on, repeating the same things. That's what people are in vast numbers, repeaters. They don't work it out. They don't think about it. They don't assess it. They ponder on it. They just repeat it.
Everyone knows that, mate. Well, I don't know that. Everyone has to know what we've made a start.
That's why this great writer, Oscar Wilde, in Britain, said, most people are other people, their thoughts are someone else's opinions, their lives are mimicry, their passions are quotation. Constant repeating. And this is what teachers do. They repeat what they are taught in teacher training college, what they're taught when they go through the education system themselves, what the curriculum demands if they're going to keep their job, they teach. Repeat, repeat, repeat. My son, Jamie, is 16. He's caused a lot of trouble with my life. I'm just saying, excuse me, how do you know that? They get angry because they can't answer it, so they can't shut up. Don't repeat this. They just repeat what they were taught at medical school and what the drug reps tell them works. And by the way, we've got a great conference by the sea in the Caribbean. Oh, thank you. Oh, I'll describe that. Yes, I see nothing wrong with that. The rest of the patients, you see. And then we see scientists repeat this. Just repeat, 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 repeat. Which is why it's the maverick scientists that break the pattern and move people forward in terms of understanding what's going on. And you don't have to be a scientist. In fact, sometimes being a scientist is a drawback. To be a scientist, you've been left-brain through the schools, left-brain through the universities, left-brain through your scientific specialisation. And this is why they can't get their heads around the wider reality. Journalists, classic repeaters. Just repeating, repeating, repeating what the official line is, never questioning it. And then their politician repeaters, Congress, Senate, all of them, just lobby for it. I love this, being bent over for so long they can't even stand up. this is what I'm doing. You get these politicians in England, in Britain and in America, I've been watching, and they say, it's safe. You go, you've never seen the inside of the laboratory in your bloody life, dog. What are you not saying? Well, someone told me. Exactly, you're a repeater. And people repeat this. Like I said, everyone knows that, mate. Everyone knows that. It's a different world. And all this is going on all the time. Programming, 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 programming. Hypnotism. Hypnotism to get us to identify who we are with our name. This guy said, we see things as they are, we see things not as they are, but as we are. Very important point. How we decode reality is how we see reality. So what they're targeting is the receiver-transmitter, the decoding system. They can program that, and we just decode reality that fits the program. That's what it's all about. Mind sees everything in terms of division, consciousness sees everything in unity, oneness, and all being one. So who do we think we are? We think we're humans. Who are we really? We are consciousness. Where are we? We're in a virtual reality universe. Let's take that a bit further. The only exists in our head in the form that we think is out here. It's an illusion. Seeing is believing. No, believing is seeing. Because beliefs can get the decoding system to decode in a certain way, and therefore the belief perpetuates itself. Becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Because the belief starts to become reality. This has been shown in the way that people with rigid beliefs, the belief as the neurons firing in the brain expresses itself as the pattern, the way certain neurons connect. And as they fire, they're basically filtering reality. And they'll filter out anything that is at odds with the belief. But then we have to call it a dissonance. And then when you change your belief, the neural pattern changes and fires up in a different way, and things change. And so, this is our base form. It's vibration. It comes through the five senses, through the brain, and is decoded into this. The only place this exists is there. This is our base state. And beyond that, no form at all, of course. So the world is in our heads. We think it's outside of us, our breath, it bloody looks like shit. things to be a long way, but it only exists here, because this is decoding time and space. So, this is what kind of amazing. When you stand and you look at the stars up in the sky, and you see them incredible, light years away, but actually they only exist in that form in here.
because time and space is a decoding illusion. It's within us. We decode it like a virtual reality game within a tiny frequency range. And it's what I call the hologram internet. If you say to someone, tell me about the internet, they'll say it's graphics and it's colours and it's text and it's all that stuff. Yes, it is. But the only place the internet exists in that form is on the computer screen. Everywhere else is electronic circuits and all that stuff, all that gadgetry and business. The only place the internet exists is on the screen. Then you say, okay, tell me about television. Well, yeah, television is moving pictures, yeah, and the programs and stuff, yeah. But the only place television exists in that form is on the screen. Everywhere else is electronic circuits, all that stuff, and in another form, broadcast frequency things. Everywhere else is something else. The only place this world exists in this form is in our heads, on our screen, decoded by the brain. I've heard scientists over the years, one or two, say that this world only exists when it's observed. That's absolutely true, and we can understand that now. Because when you put a computer disk, information into a computer, it plays out. Every piece of information on that disk doesn't go on the screen. The only piece of information that goes on the screen at any point is what the laser is reading. What it's observing onto the screen. So it's absolutely true. This reality is observed into apparent physical existence by the decoding system. When we're not decoding it, no one's decoding it, it's back into an energetic vibrational form. As one level, like I say, it's digital. So what is the matrix, as people call it, this virtual reality? I would refer to the matrix as that part of the virtual reality that we're experiencing. We're really starting to in the second section. But the virtual reality is all information. Because what we call light is energy and it's information. And encoded in that light is information that we encode into this virtual reality. It's in what we call the photons. And as we decode that energy, like the wireless internet, exactly the same, I'll come to that in a sec. We are taking that information from its vibrational form in light, through the electrical information to the brain that becomes what is itself come to holographic illusory reality. So we are actually, this level of us, we are receiver transmitters. We are receiving information and decoding it, and we are also transmitting it and making a difference to the reality and imprinting our contribution to the reality. And how amazing they use in receiver transmitters, they use quartz crystals and stuff like that, so much crystals. And it turns out that we are a bloody liquid crystal. We have trillions and trillions of cells, and the membrane of every cell is liquid crystal. We are crystals. Do you know, met another guy up in Northern California, Dr. Harvey Middleton, and he showed me my own blood through his telescope, or microscope rather, to such a level of magnification that my blood became crystal. It became quartz crystal. It's extraordinary. Because at one level, that's what everything is. It's liquid crystal. We are receiver transmitters. And therefore, if you can destabilize the receiver transmitter, then you can destabilize the way you read reality. That's what is happening to us in so many ways. I'll get to that in the second section. And it turns out that DNA is actually a receiver transmitter, an antenna. This is an article I read about DNA. From the characteristic form of this giant molecule, a wound double helix, the DNA represents an ideal electromagnetic antenna. On one hand is the elongated, and thus a blade, which can take up very well electrical pulses. On the other hand, seen from above, it has the form of a ring, and thus is a very magnetical antenna. This is a wonderful quote from a book by Carl Castaneda, who was in the 1960s, which is quoting the shaman called Don Juan Matos. Some people say that Don 1 didn't exist, because the like, Nana quotes are fantastic, because where are we going from? And this is what Don 1 was quoted as saying. We are perceivers, we are awares, we are not objects, we have no civility, we are boundless. We, or rather our reason, forget this, and thus we entrap the totality of ourselves in a vicious circle from which we rarely emerge in our lifetime. And you might imagine, and we're encouraging quite a great to do that by the control system. And so like I just mentioned, what they're doing is through verbal programming, destabilization chemically and electromagnetically through microwaves, through religious belief and through education, they are seeking to manipulate the way this becomes reality and to knock it off its optimum ability to do that and to put us in a vibrational prison that I call the Matrix, with invisible lights, put in that, and leaving us in this bewilderment, where are we, who are we, what are we doing here? So, it's like this picture has computers that are connected by wires, just symbolically, but of course we're not connected by wires, what we're talking about is the wireless internet. That's what this reality is, this virtual reality, this matrix, this viral part of it, I'll get to it in a second section like I said. If this theatre has wireless internet, probably does, I don't know, but if it does, where is it? Where is it? Can't see it. Nothing here. And yet, if I tune this computer interface, body mind, to the internet, it will pull that information out of the ether and turn it into a reality on the screen. The same reality is today. If someone picking up the wireless internet in England or South Africa or Australia at the same time will also decode onto their computer, collecting reality. Like I say, technology is now mirroring the reality we're experiencing. And this is what this part of the Matrix was all about. The Matrix is everywhere, said the Morpheus character. It is all around us, even now in this very room. You can see it when you look out your window or you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. What truth? That you are a slave here. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage. You were born into a prison and you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. And now, like I say, in the second section, I'll get to this more, but just briefly. There's nothing wrong with the virtual reality universe. It's an experience. What's happened is it's been fired all along, like the computers in China, so they can't get their internet, and we get into a much smaller area. And that's what's entrapped people into this fake reality that I call the Matrix, which I differentiate with the wider virtual reality universe, more like Dark Matter and Melody talk about. The Matrix is encoded in the light of information, the wireless internet. So, we should be actually accessing vastly greater amounts of awareness and of this universe than we are. Like I say, in China, they've firewalled it off, so they get a fraction of what the rest of us get. Very, very good symbolism. So what's happened is, at one point, we were this much wider experience, this much wider, I say we, I mean humanity, much wider range of frequency, and gradually, this control system took over, it's multidimensional, and eventually has reached the point it is today. And as time, its hearts went somewhere else. So, in fact, what's happened is we've been firewalled off in terms of what we can decode. Through the body computer into a smaller bubble than the wider virtual reality universe. We're in a bubble within a bubble, a virtual reality within a virtual reality. And of course we have our own bubbles as well, bubbles within bubbles within bubbles, and it's all about manipulating what we see, manipulating what we decode. So what is reality? It's the range of frequencies that we are decoding and how we are decoding them. A wonderful story that kind of encapsulates all that I've said so far. And it's from this book, The Holographic Universe, by a guy called Michael Tolbert. Brilliant book.
looking at all the main streets, and just off main street scientific information to show this is all around the universe, which it is. We'll come to that in a second. But he tells a story in there of a party his father put on for some friends, and he had a stage editors come along to do party tricks. And you witness this. There was this guy eventually who was called Tom, and he was sitting there, and he's, you know, making them do things like eat an apple, eat a potato, and think it's an apple. Now, how can they do that? Because the hypnotist is implanting the belief, i.e. the program, that it's a potato, it's an apple. So he eats the potato. That information is passed from the taste senses to the brain. But the brain is being programmed to decode it in a different way, decode it to the taste of an apple. So he switches it. And so you try and tell him he's not eating an apple. And it's the same that's happening collectively to humanity all the time through the information manipulations that we are subjected to. They're trying to program the brain to, and they're very successful up to this point, to read reality in a way that normally would read it. So anyway, the hypnotist says to this guy, when I bring you back from a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter anymore. At which point he leads the daughter to stand in front of the father. He's looking into her belly. So he brings him back from a waking state, apparently, and he says, can you see your daughter in the room, Tom? And Tom's looking around, he can't see her, she's here. She starts laughing, he can't hear her. And then the hypnotist went behind the daughter, he put his hand in the small of the back and said, I'm holding something, Tom. What am I holding? Tom's here. He said, well, you're holding your wife. He said, well, he says, an inscription on the watch, can you read it? Can you read the inscription? His daughter's here. And people hear that story, and scientists going through the system hear that story, and they go, rubbish, impossible. No, it's not. Impossible at all. Perfectly logical. This is his daughter's prime state, as it is with all of us. If he doesn't decode that energy field into that, she doesn't enter this reality. So, he's decoding everything and everyone else in the room, but he's not decoding her because he's been programmed not to read, like programming a computer, not to read that energy field, not to read that information. As a result, everyone else in the room, who hasn't been programmed, they can see the door, he can't. Imagine if you know that, and humanity has not a clue, the potential for mass programming is unbelievable. We think the world is solid. It seems to be. It can't be. Atoms that make up this solid world have no solidity. They're just pockets of energy. Someone said that, you know, the nucleus in the centre of an atom, if the nucleus was the size of a 10-cent piece, the atom would have to be the size of a cathedral. The rest of it is space, and if you go deep enough into the nucleus, and the electrons you find into space as well. This is just energy, what we call space. It's the decoding system that gives the appearance of solidity. Oh, people can't walk through walls. They can if they can decode themselves enough not to read reality in that way, they can. Because it's just energy. But then people say, well, I saw this extraterrestrial and he left through the wall. You're mad! No! It's just, there are no miracles, it's just understanding reality. And understanding holograms is, to understand this reality. Holograms, we buy in shops and stuff, they have the appearance, sorry, very low level compared to better ones, they have the appearance of being three-dimensional, but there's no three-dimensional at all, it's an illusion. And how they do it, when people don't come across it, so most people have, is they have a beam, a laser beam, which is coherent light, and doesn't go out like a torchlight, so it's coherent light. And they put part of the beam onto a photographic plate, and the other part of the beam goes across the whatever they want to film, and then goes back and hits the photographic plate. And what it does when they two collide is it creates what they call an interference pattern. It's similar to dropping two pebbles in the water, and as the waveforms collide, that collision is a waveform representation of where those pebbles dropped, how fast, what distance they were from each other, etc. Like I say, like that. And this is a holographic plate. It's like a fingerprint. It's just a series of waves. And you go, what's that? And then you fire a laser at it, and bingo, out of nowhere comes this three-dimensional, and the best of them, looking really solid, three-dimensional form. That's what this is, what we're doing. These are all holograms. The best of them look as solid as you and me. Oh, the Queen's a hologram. Thank goodness for that, she was real. Landscape. I mean, that's not such a good one, but it gives the same feel of the three-dimensional nature of the universe. This guy is in one Australian city, and this guy is on a stage in another, and he's projected from the other city onto this stage. This is in Adelaide, I think he was in Melbourne, as a hologram. Like I say, human technology is now mirroring reality. Computer games, the same, and the rest of it. So, the world is actually vibrational. It comes through us to become this. It's a construct. Digital on one level. Oh, this is... I want to head to America in January. I've been writing about holographic Asian realities, something that the audience will know. It's many, many, many years ago, way back, many books ago. I'm at Heathrow Airport, and I'm looking at this newsstand, and I see this. The New Scientist is as mainstream science as you can possibly get in Britain. And that was its front page. You are a hologram projected from the edge of the universe. And I thought, oh, let's go at 15. How did I know that? Because anyone can access this knowledge. You don't need to go through the education system. In fact, it's a bloody bad thing if you go to foreign and get indoctrinated by it. And, you know, this is the article was terribly brilliant, but this was what they concluded. Then there's the other thing about holograms. Explains something else, another mystery. One of the great things about holograms is every part of the hologram is a smaller version of the whole. So if you cut the holographic print into four, and you fire the laser at the four pieces, you won't get a quarter-sized picture of the whole picture. A quarter of the picture. You'll get a quarter-sized version of the whole picture. Everything is a smaller version of everything else with a hologram. And this is why this happens. This is why acupuncture can find points on the ear that represent all the different organs and areas of the body. This is why reflexology can find places on the foot and the hand where they can affect the body, the organs in other parts of the body. Because the body is a hologram, and therefore every part of the body is another version of the body. A smaller version, not as efficient, but still a version of the whole body. Harvey Middleton, this guy I told you about, Dr. Harvey Middleton, he wrote this book, Holographic Blood, and I saw it in my own blood. You went through this bloody microscope, but there's all little holographic pictures in it, in the blood. And he's looking down before I looked at it. He said, jump up to your hips. I said, bloody hell, yeah. He said, I can see your pair of hips in this blood. What? It's amazing how this goes. But this is a writer, English writer, William Blake said, to see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wildflower, or infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. Everything is part of everything else. And this is where we get as above, so below from. Because it's a hologram. See, that's the body energy field, and that's the earth energy field. It has to be like that. We are a smaller version, that's the body computer. There will be a smaller version of the earth is a smaller version, and so it goes on, until you get the super hologram, which is the virtual reality universe in its entirety. Miracles! It's just decoding reality in a different way. An illusion, you can't burn an illusion unless you believe it can, and therefore create that experience. There is no spoon. It is not the spoon that bends, it is only yourself, exactly. The spoon that exists here, if you want to bend it, it will bend it here. And then there's this line in the Matrix too. I've seen an agent punch through a concrete wall. Men have emptied entire clips of them and they hit nothing but air. And yet their strength and their speed are still based in a world that is built on rules. Because of that, they will never be as strong as fast as you can be. In other words, if you're working within rules, you're working within the construct. When you go beyond rules, what is beyond rules? All possibility. Infinite consciousness, our true state of awareness. Bring it back together. If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. But what the control system wants to do is keep those doors of perception anything but cleansed, as dirty as possible. I think, therefore, I am, said Descartes. I compute, therefore, I am, I would say, updating it. But in the true nature of self, I am, therefore, I am. I just am. Everything just is. I'm the force with no name, in truth. We give names to things that are responsive. But we just are. Just to finish this first section very quickly, the mathematical construct. On one level, it's mathematics and digital. And interestingly, what's happening now, again, as we're beginning this mirroring reality technology, they're developing something called digital holograms, which don't need all that contraption that I talked about earlier. They create holograms digitally. And some of them are so amazing that I've read stories where people have been asked to, you know, walk through it and they won't, because it looks so real. That motorbike is a hologram, a digital hologram. It has no solidity. This is some of the technology that makes it. And that's what we are. But because of the way we encode it, if we encode it as real, then there is, it does have the appearance of solidity because we're encoding it that way. A lot of the mathematics is binary, what they call trinary. It's on-off electrical charges, pulses. And again, we're lining up with the same situation with the DNA. The way that these on-off cones are aligned with each other decides what the outcome is. And it's the same with DNA, because on one level that's digital too. Mirrored by the matrix movie, that the whole of it is digital on one level. And that's what she talks about to Jill Walter Taylor about the pixels, because she was picking up the digital level before it was decoded into the holograms. The DNA is digital, everything's digital. The Earth grid and the Earth is digital on one level. And this is why it's a geometrical construct, the Earth like everything else, it's certainly the decoded level of it. And because it's this geometrical construct of the energy lines, if you put a temple here on this point, because you know from that ancient knowledge base that that's one of the vortex points, one of the points where these lines meet, and you put a stone circle here, and you put, an ancient earthworks there, or another one, and then researchers come along later, and they're doing their books and their research, and they're lining up these things, and they're going, these ancient structures are aligned over vast amounts of time with the absolute geometrical connection. How do they do that? Simple. They know where the vortex points are. The vortex points are in geometrical relationship to each other, because it's a mathematical construct on one level. So you put something there, and there, and there. You don't have to communicate, but you're going to be in geometrical alignment. That's how it works. Like Stonehenge, all these things, they're on the vortex points. That's why they align. And this is why you find mathematics encoded into these fantastic ancient structures like pi, golden mean, and the Fibonacci sequence, because they encoded this stuff, because the ancients had this knowledge base, and it's passed through into what we call today the Illuminati. So Fibonacci, Leonardo Pisano Fibonacci was Italian. And his sequence that he came up with, although it seems to have been known way back in India and other places too, but he picked it up. You add the two numbers to get the next one, 2, 3, 5, 3, 5, 8, so on. And what's been found is that this Fibonacci sequence can be found all over the place, in the way shells grow, the way plants grow, in the proportions of the human face. Because on one level it's digital, the way, like I say, the way plants grow, the way they form. This guy, an American doctor who studied the human face and proportions because I think he was into cosmetic surgery, Stephen Marlborough, he said, all life is biology, all biology is physiology, all physiology is chemistry, all chemistry is physics, and all physics is maths. What he needed to say, I would say at the end, is all maths is energy, or energy is consciousness. And that's the sequence. Then the question comes, why isn't science still at Stephen's? Because if you just clear your mind and follow the information, it becomes blatantly, blatantly obvious. The reason is, because that's what science does. They're all looking at different dots, and they don't connect the dots to see how it fits together, because the system is structured like that, because they don't want science saying, hey, I found it! We don't want to know that, shut up! Funding's going! And they're looking down the microscope through the left brain, which is coding everything in a certain way. And you know, we have this thing in Britain called pantomimes at Christmas. And one of the things they do is someone will come on the stage, it's for children and families and stuff, and then someone will come and stand behind them, and all the kids will shout, "He's behind you!" And the guy goes, "What? The guy's not here." "No, he's not! He's behind you!" And of course, when you're decoding everything through the left brain, like scientists are, overwhelmingly, the vast majority, the truth is always behind you. Because you look at something, and as soon as you look at it, you're decoding it through your belief system. So it manifests within line with your belief system. So you never see it. This is why they found that the belief system of the scientist affects the outcome of the experiment, because they're decoding it differently. Science without religion, said Einstein, is lame. Religion without science is blind. I would say science without consciousness is lame. Religion without consciousness is blind. In fact, religion with consciousness is no longer religion. What is reality for them who believe it? What is reality for them who we're told to believe it? What is reality for them who we decode it to be? And from that, at this point, after the break, I'll get into the story of what's going on today and the other deeper levels behind it. But this is through multi-level conspiracy. It's based on understanding what I talked about in the last 2.5 hours and making sure we never hear it, decoding us to believe what suits the control system. Who's behind it and why? We'll get into that in 1 hour. Thank you very much.